This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. Today, I'm shocked to even be saying this out loud, but my guest is Pete Droege. Hello, Pete.
Hello.
Joining me from your home studio, correct, on Vashon Island?
That's right, yeah. 15-minute boat ride from West Seattle.
And another thing that I am shocked to be saying out loud, you are in concert tomorrow night at the Vashon Center for the Arts. This is the first show in how long exactly?
It's the first proper show in 10 years.
Wow.
And our last show was at Mississippi Studios in Portland almost exactly 10 years ago. We might be just a little bit shy of exactly 10 years by maybe a month or so. And we've done, you know, we've done a few benefit shows where we'll come play like two or three songs here and there, but this is our first proper full show.
Well, I definitely want to pick at that in a few minutes. But for listeners that are not familiar with your beginnings on the national scene, late 80s into the 90s, signed with American Records, had a pretty darn big hit with If You Don't Love Me, I'll Kill Myself. It was all over MTV back when they played music.
Right.
Out on tour with all kinds of people, Sheryl Crow and Petty, likened a little bit to Tom Petty in terms of the sound. And then what happened? You just kind of went a different direction, it seems like. I mean, you put out quite a few records, but in terms of that steady public awareness, you went a different path.
Well, I was, I signed with American Records in 93, and that was Rick Rubin's label, and a producer named Brendan O'Brien signed me to that label. And I made three records for Brendan, two that were on American, and then Brendan moved over to Epic Records, where he had his own label called 57 Records. And he bought me out of my contract from American and took me over there, and we did a record. And, you know, I would correct you, If You Don't Love Me wasn't really like a certified hit. It was, I think, a bona fide minor hit at best, you know.
Fair enough, okay.
So after that third record, you know, things just weren't slamming enough for a big company like that to sort of continue to, you know, back dump trucks filled with cash up to my front door to kind of keep making records. And so I was dropped from Epic after my third record. And at that point was really squarely at a crossroad where I could kind of see I could continue to pursue the sort of so-called recording artist track of, you know, performing and touring and doing all that cha-cha, which would have kind of meant kind of going out on the road and kind of slugging it out. Or I saw this other path where I would focus more on the studio and producing music, and I was interested in film and TV music at that point. And I chose to go that path, so I kind of took the resources that I had at the time, which due to my contract with Epic, in order to not make a record for them, they had to give me a big pile of money to basically not make a record because I had a what was called a two-firm deal. So I took that money and invested it in recording equipment and just sort of hunkered down and started learning the art of making records on my own.
Hmm. I mean, that time in Seattle was incredibly fertile for music. You think of the list of bands that blew up around that time, Nirvana. Green River never really blew up, but they were certainly seminal. Mother Love Bone, Temple of the Dog, Soundgarden, Alice in Chains, a small little band called Pearl Jam. You knew a lot of those guys, and a lot of those guys were fans of what Pete Droege did as a musician. Was there ever an option for you to link up with one of those bands?
Well, I've kind of owe a lot of my career to the Pearl Jam guys. Most notably, Mike McCready, the guitar player, is who financed the demo that got me my record deal with American, and was the one who passed that demo on to Brendan O'Brien, who was producing their second record at the time, and who then ultimately ended up signing me. And even before that, years before that, during the Mother Love Bone time, Stone and I were, you know, making music together just recreationally, and he liked a lot of what I'd been doing with my home demos and passed those along to their A&R guy at the time. I ended up getting a what's called a demo deal from Polygram Records at that time, which didn't end up turning into anything. But So both of those guys were, you know, instrumental in helping me out along those lines. And then I've ended up collaborating a ton with Stone over the years. I've worked as producer for two solo records that he's put out. So we've ended up collaborating in that way. And Mike and I have done some stuff as well where we've got a couple actually ambient music pieces that are going to come out as part of a charity record.
Very cool.
So, you know, we've stayed in touch over the years and, you know, they're dear friends and, yeah, so.
Well, tell me a little bit about the setup you've got in the studio. I know that you're going to do a couple of tunes for us with your musical collaborator, Elaine Summers.
Yeah.
Acoustic guitar, what are you going to play for us?
Yeah, just, we're just sitting at one mic, a couple voices and one acoustic guitar, sort of old school, nothing fancy.
I'm thrilled.
The studio is a home studio. So we basically took over the full top floor of the house. So the control room is in a loft space that sits above the kitchen and dining room and then overlooks the living room where we have a grand piano and a Hammond B3 organ. And then upstairs in what used to be the master bedroom is kind of the live room where we'll perform. And that's, it's got some nice high vaulted ceilings. And that's where all the amps and drums and loud stuff lives.
Sounds fantastic. What do you want to do first today?
How about Unsinkable?
Sounds great. Pete Droege is my guest live today on Jefferson Public Radio.
I'm moving slow motion away. Cloud on the sea, waves of emotion come lapping my heels, but I only got sand in my feet. Maybe, just maybe, you didn't see me. Unsinkable.
That is Pete Droege with Elaine Summers live today on Jefferson Public Radio from their home studio, joining me from Vashon Island just outside of Seattle, Washington. Pete, I was a little surprised to discover that you were actually born in Eugene, Oregon.
Yes, I was.
You're an Oregonian. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I know that you had spent some time living in Portland.
Yep.
What is it about Vashon Island? And you grew up, what, a Bainbridge Island, which is a hop, skip, and a jump over the water. What is it about that place that centers you so much?
You know, I think it's the pace, for one. It's, you know, pretty slow out here. And when we first moved to Vashon, what we'd heard about Vashon was that it was a lot like Bainbridge Island was 25 years before, which we moved out here in the mid-90s, and I kind of did the math, and my family had moved to Bainbridge in the 70s, and I remembered it was sort of before Bainbridge got fancy. It was still pretty funky and, you know, pretty squarely granola, kind of West Coast, crunchy, artsy community. And Vashon has managed to retain that more so than Bainbridge has. So it's that sort of slow pace, a rural setting, having a community that's, you know, there's lots of artists around, lots of people, you know, doing creative things. That appeals to us very much.
Well, after you were able to get that studio set up there, my assumption would have been that there were still folks that were interested in seeing you perform publicly. Were you not interested in doing that, or did the recording process and skill set just become of such interest to you that that's where all of your attention was focused?
You know, I would say the latter. For a while, I tried to kind of keep a foot in both worlds. And what ended up happening a lot is I'd book a show or a series of shows, and then I'd be in the middle of a recording project and just be really bummed that I had to sort of pull the plug and sort of, you know, get out of that flow to go do the gig. And it's, you know, it's a different set of muscles. You know, the more you kind of get into recording, there's sort of different touch to the, you know, the way that you play instruments and the way that you sing for a microphone for a recording versus playing in a live room. And it just began to feel that was more the environment that I enjoyed. And then it also got to where when I started doing other projects for, like, you know, composing for an independent film or something like that, it got to where, you know, deadlines can be pretty crucial in that world. And so not having to sort of pull up in the middle of a gig and go, you know, jump in the car and drive somewhere to play and then come back to not sort of have to lose time in the middle of a deadline driven project was also something that was just over time. I kind of felt like I just wanted to really put my focus into the creative studio work.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, one of the coveted records that we've got here in our record library is that record that came out by the Thorns.
Right.
And we have the limited edition version that has the whole album re-recorded acoustic.
Right.
Which was such a great gift for radio. We loved having a different variation on that. It's a little painful that there was never a follow-up, because it was such a tremendously solid record start to finish.
Thank you.
Did you guys all just kind of go your separate ways after coming together for that one-off project?
You know, it was a situation where we all lived in different cities, and it was kind of just a logistical bear to kind of get us all in the same place. So it was a fairly expensive endeavor, and it was, you know, we were backed by Columbia Records, so they, you know, they were able to sort of pony up in order to sort of fly us all around and put us up. So I think it was just sort of the scope and scale of it that made it difficult to repeat. And when we started into it, it was never intended to be a long-term thing. It was always kind of meant to be a side project and a one-off thing. So I think if the record had been massively huge, that probably would have influenced things in a way that maybe there would have been more.
Yeah. All right. Well, you mentioned that you moved on and started doing a lot of writing for TV movie projects, and you had a lot of commercial placement. Movies, Dumb and Dumber, Almost Famous, Zombieland, TV shows, Nashville, Grey's Anatomy, ad campaigns for T-Mobile, Toyota, a bunch of other things. Did you, at a certain point in your career, set out to write music that would work in those venues, or were people coming out of the woodwork after discovering your existing songs, asking you for placements?
It started with the existing stuff, and I feel really lucky that the music that we enjoy making and that sort of touches us and that is emotionally connected for us has the good fortune of also finding these other lives, you know. So, you know, a song I was thinking of playing today, Under the Waves, is a good example where that was a song that we wrote it for a script. It was a movie called Catch and Release. And so it was written for a specific purpose, but it was also at the same time ended up being a really a personal song at the same time. So as much as I was thinking about this character in the movie as I wrote it, ultimately later I kind of realized there was a lot of resonance for me personally. So it's been, I feel like I'm rambling a little bit, but I think it did come out of just, you know, songs that kind of came from the heart for records that ended up having these other lives and getting placed. And then some of the work, some of the custom music work that I've done over the years is kind of an extension of that. I've never been hired to create calypso music or anything that's outside my wheelhouse, you know. I've been lucky that, you know, if an ad agency has called me, it's always been, do that singer-songwriter-y, folky, acoustic-y thing that you do. Like, we want that. Yeah. We want you to do what you do. And so I feel pretty lucky that I've been able to engage in that world without having to really deviate from my wheelhouse.
Yeah, it's handy that that's the sound that naturally comes out, right?
Yeah, you know, and it's, you know, Elaine and I talk about this kind of stuff all the time. It's, you know, there's an elusive thing in music that it's hard to pin it down, that thing that makes a recording into a record, or that makes a song really connect and resonate. And that's kind of where the art lies for me, is pursuing that X factor and just trying to tap into something that's really deep and real.
Pete Droege is my guest live today on Jefferson Public Radio. He joins me from his home studio on Vashon Island in Washington State. Is it called Puzzle Tree Studios?
Yeah.
Okay. PuzzleTreeMusic.com is the web address to learn all about Pete's music and the studio and his various projects. He's in his home studio along with Elaine Summers. Well, you mentioned Under the Waves. Would you do that one for us?
Yeah, let's give it a try.
Salt upon my skin. Under the waves, falling away, I no longer see the rings of rain. I want to feel it, if just to know it's true. It's just a surface wound. Don't pay to fight it. Can't change the color blue. All I wanted was to impress you. Just to know it's true, look me over. It's just a surface wound. Don't pay to fight it. Can't change the color blue. All I wanted was to impress you. And if I catch myself crying for things I cannot control, head on back to the water where tears are invisible. Under the waves, I know who I am. I don't need to spin the story. Under the waves, down in the deep, I no longer see the rings of rain.
That is P. Droege and Elaine Summers, known collectively as the Droege and Summers Blend. We'll get to that here in just a minute. Under the Waves is the name of the tune. P. Droege, my guest, live today on Jefferson Public Radio. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Droege and Summers Blend. How did you and Elaine first meet, and how long did it take for you to start making music together, or was that first?
We first met 3 days after I moved to Portland. That would have been January of 93, and we met, if anybody remembers, the venue in Portland called La Luna. They had a secondary venue upstairs called The Living Room that they opened, and they had a sort of opening party for that, and that's where Elaine and I met. We were fast friends, and at that point, I was just right on the brink of getting my record deal. And so when I was going down to South by Southwest to do a showcase, I asked her if she would sing backup vocals for that gig, and then I got my record deal, and then we were going to make the record in Atlanta that fall. And I said, hey, come down and, you know, sing on the record. And then the following year, we were on tour. Hey, why don't you come on tour? So that's kind of how it came about. She was in my band, and then there came a point where she was writing songs and I started to record demos for her. And ultimately, those demos became her first record that came out on Stone Gossard's label, Loose Groove. So then I was sort of acting as her producer. And eventually, around the early 2000s or so, we started to write songs together. So at that point, we were completely writing separately. But in the 2000s, we kind of began to collaborate on songwriting, and we started to notice a trend that the songs that we wrote together were the ones that kind of had the most traction on our records. In fact, Under the Waves, the one we just played, that was an example of one that we co-wrote on that record that had a lot of life outside of the record. So eventually, she also then was really collaborative with me on a lot of the film and TV stuff that I was doing, serving an executive producer role. So in one way or another, we're always in collaboration. And the Droege and Summers Blend came about because we started to have this batch of songs that we felt were really geared around the harmony vocals. And so we wanted to kind of create this other thing, the Droege and Summers Blend, where really the emphasis is on the blend. And that was a little bit of a residual effect of being in the Thorns, where that was Matthew Sweet's idea with the Thorns, like, let's make this all about the harmonies. And if you listen to that record, you notice there's virtually, there's very little singing on there that's not at least two-part, but mostly three-part harmony throughout the whole record. And so we kind of borrowed that concept that I credit to Matthew with the Thorns for Droege and Summers Blend. So it really becomes about our voices becoming this other thing together. So,
what are the chances that we're going to at some point here see a volume three?
Well, we have some tracks in various states of undress at the moment.
Good.
And I'm kind of wrestling around with, you know, what does it mean to release music in, you know, 2016, 2017? And so I'm kind of toying around with the idea of, rather than, you know, wait till they're all done and put them together like the first two volumes were five-song EPs, maybe we just play around with releasing singles incrementally and then maybe after five or six of those, then maybe we take volumes one, volume two, and all of these, and then throw them on one sort of proper full length. That's kind of what we're wrestling with at this point, thinking that we'll do.
Tell me about what you are up to now. You have recently produced a record by a band we know quite well here at JPR out of Portland, Moody Little Sister.
Yep.
Very cool record.
Super proud of that record.
And you also were working on a documentary that ended up becoming fairly significant for you in terms of your own personal life and situation, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, A Lot Like You is a movie that I worked on as the composer first, and then over time was sort of upgraded to actually becoming a producer on the film. And the director's journey really inspired me to kind of look into my own life, and through being inspired by Ellie and a lot of the questions that she asks in the film, which has to do with, you know, where we come from and what we inherit and what we pass down, I started to kind of look into my own story and found my birth family, which was just like a really massive chapter in my life to sort of open up that whole world for myself, to kind of ask myself how being an adoptee sort of, you know, affected my life and what that meant for me as far as, you know, kind of coming into sort of midlife and sort of asking questions about who we are and where we come from. That was a really beautiful chapter in my life to be able to reunite with my birth family down in Appalachian, Ohio. And so I really have that movie to thank for sort of really me being inspired to unearth all of that.
Well, now that you are maybe slightly coming out of semi-retirement, at least for one show, what was it that made you want to do this concert now at the Vashon Center for the Arts?
Well, we sing all the time, and every now and then we get together around a fire pit with friends, and so we've been sort of flirting with the idea of playing out for a while, just because we sort of feel like, you know, we might want to share this with people. You know, it's not bad.
Many would say it's actually quite good, Pete.
Well, thank you. So here on the island, they built this place, and it's really stunning. If people want to kind of Google around and get a look at it,
it's VashonAlliedArts.org.
Yeah, and it's just a state-of-the-art, beautiful space, and it was the opening night, their big sort of unveiling to the public. I set foot in there, and we kind of been thinking that once they built this place, we'd probably want to play it, but it was literally the minute I set foot in there, and the executive director and the booker came up to me, and they're like, "So, will you play here?" And I was like, "Absolutely, let's get a date on the calendar." So we were very much inspired by the space, and you know, part of it was also we have a lot of friends here on Vashon that have really embraced our music and love our records. And, you know, our songs and our records are kind of part of their lives. And it kind of felt like it was a shame that most of these people had never seen us play, you know. Yeah. So we kind of felt like it was a nice way to sort of share our music with our community.
Well, now that you will have a gig under your belt, maybe there's a chance we could entice you to come down this way and do a date.
Assuming we don't fall on our faces and come home after the gig and go, "What were we thinking? Let's never do that again." We won't, you know, I don't know. We'll see. You know, I'm still super, super inspired by the studio. So the idea of traveling isn't as appealing as it was when I was a kid, you know?
Well, I am honored that you took a few minutes out of your busy schedule to do a live session with us, Pete. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Pete Droege is my guest live today on Jefferson Public Radio. All kinds of information, and it's a very cool website, too, if you've never visited. It's called puzzletreemusic.com. There's information on both the studio and also on the music that Pete has done over the years. He is in his home studio on Vashon Island, along with his musical collaborator, Elaine Summers. And I believe you've got one more tune for us.
Yeah, this is our tribute to our very own little island here, and the song is aptly titled Island. Feel the
death and defeat on an island. There's way more dirt than concrete on an island. There's always an end to the street on an island. The shore is always in reach on an island. Air is salty and sweet on an island. You never get a better night's sleep on an island. You know still waters run deep on an island. There's plenty of secrets to keep on an island. Gives me some. On an island, I keep trouble at bay. On an island, I'm just far enough away. On an island, it's clear that I'm gonna stay. On an island, spend the rest of my days on an island, among the mist and the haze of the island. There's never any need to complain on an island. You gotta take a boat or a plane to my island. Gives me
that is Island. I didn't know that's where the name came from. It was just a tribute to where you live. Pete Droege and Elaine Summers are live today on Jefferson Public Radio. PuzzleTreeMusic.com is Pete's website to learn all about the music he does for TV and film and also the recording studio there. Pete Droege, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you for having us.